The translation and purport by His Divine Grace to verse 20 and 21. The demigods observed Lord Shiva sitting on a summit of Kailas Hill with his wife, Bhavani. For the auspicious development of the three worlds, he was being worshipped by the great saintly persons desiring liberation. The demigods offered him their obeisances and prayers with great respect. Translation to text 21. The Prajapatis said, O greatest of all demigods, Mahadeva, supersoul of all living entities and cause of their happiness and prosperity, we have come to your shelter of your lotus feet. Now please save us from this fiery poison which is spreading all over the three worlds. Purport. Since Lord Shiva is in charge of annihilation, why should he be approached for protection, which is given by Lord Vishnu? Lord Brahma creates and Lord Shiva annihilates. But both Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are incarnations of Lord Vishnu and are known as Shakti Vaish Avatar. They are empowered by the special powers like that of Lord Vishnu, who is actually all-pervading in their activities. Therefore, whenever prayers for protection are offered to Lord Shiva, actually Lord Vishnu is indicated, for otherwise Lord Shiva is meant for destruction. Lord Shiva is one of the Ishwaras, or the controllers known as Shakti Vish Avatar. Therefore, he can be addressed as having the qualities of Lord Vishnu. Om Agyana Tramanandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshusan Mritam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Panchakalpa Trubhyasya Kripa Sindhu Vyacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnabhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Ghor Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Lord Shiva saves the universe. So in this verse, we can understand that when the churning of the ocean was taking place, a lot of poison came, and all the poison was spreading all over the three worlds. And all the demigods, all the prajapatis, everyone approached Lord Shiva for shelter. Now one would understand that if Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the ultimate savior of all, then why approach Lord Shiva? So here, of course, it is mentioned that Lord Shiva is also an incarnation of the Supreme Lord. He is not different from the Supreme Lord. Unfortunately, Lord Shiva is the most misunderstood personality. You know, generally people have a misconception that Lord Shiva, according to the Shivites, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the ultimate. And they sometimes cite examples of how Lord Shiva is the Supreme. And one of the most common examples cited is that of Lord Ramachandra. When he was preparing to cross the ocean to go to Lanka to retrieve Sita back from Ravana, he was worshipping Lord Shiva. And the name of that deity of Lord Shiva in South India is called Rameshwar. Now, in technical terms, if you say Ram Ishwar, means Ishwar of Rama, Lord and Master of Rama. Who is the Lord and Master of Rama? Is Shiva. But it is misunderstood. You know, it's like Lord Shiva was shown great respect by Lord Ramachandra. Now why? One must understand. If we understand the actual crust of our Vaishnava Siddhanta, is that we pay respect to Vaishnavas. And if you do Vaishnava offense, then it will kill your devotion. So it's very clear that Lord Ramachandra is actually teaching us to pay respect to great Vaishnavas. In fact, Lord Shiva is addressed as one of the greatest Vaishnavas. Now, unless and until we understand the proper etiquette of approaching Vaishnavas and worshipping them with honor and respect, our devotion is of no value. We may be a great devotee of Krishna, but if we offend his devotees, then it is a great offense. So here, again, in this particular instance, is also showing great regard for Lord Shiva as a great Vaishnava and most compassionate, who would save all entities from suffering. Because obviously the poison was spreading all over, and it was a great danger that everybody would be killed by the poison. So Lord Shiva, he drank all the poison and held it in his neck, and he prevented from great disaster. Now, here also is mentioned by Prabhupada in the purport that he is one of the incarnations of the Lord. In fact, in the scriptures it is mentioned that the Supreme Lord in the spiritual world and in the Vaikuntha planets, he is known as Sadashiva, or he is Vishnu himself, Mahavishnu. But when he enters the material world for a particular duty which he is going to perform, which is of annihilating the cosmic creation at the end of the day of Brahma, then he takes the form of Lord Shiva. But of course, Lord Shiva is also not some ordinary personality. He is also equally beautiful. He is all empowered by all the potencies of the Lord. But he doesn't exercise all of it. Just like we sometimes read in the Ramayana, that Lord Ramachandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when he descended to this world to perform his pastimes, he did not use any of his supernatural powers. Otherwise, if he wanted to kill Ravana, he doesn't need the aid of the army of Sugriva, or he doesn't need any weapons. Just by the snap of a finger, he could annihilate. But he was showing us a particular way a human being should live, because he came as an ideal human being. So he was establishing the principles of a human being. Prabhupada many times says that unless and until you develop these human qualities, then you are just simply a polished animal. Even worse than animals sometimes, because animals at least, they follow whatever the laws of nature are. They will not violate the laws of nature. Whereas human beings, because they're endowed with this special intelligence, then they would sometimes think themselves Ishwaras or masters, controllers, and therefore they would violate the laws of nature. As we see even today in the world, we are violating so many laws of nature, and therefore we are facing the consequences of that. But coming to the point of Lord Shiva, he is the greatest Vaishnava, and unless and until we show him great respect and honor, our devotion will not be of any value. You know, sometimes we have seen in our society that when we hear about Lord Shiva, or even if we are going on a pilgrimage and we see a Shiva temple, we say, "Well, it's only Shiva temple, nothing great. We don't have to go and pay our respects or offer our prayers." But Lord Shiva is a great Vaishnava, and without Vaishnava compassion, we cannot develop spiritual progress. In this regard, there is a very, very nice story of one great saint in Gujarat. He's a born Brahmin, and generally Brahmanas' Ishtadev, their worshipful deity, is Lord Shiva. Although they are Vaishnavas, but they still worship Lord Shiva. Now, they don't worship Lord Shiva as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they worship Lord Shiva as the great Vaishnava who will assist them to connect with the Supreme Lord. Now, this great saint, he was simply absorbed in his day-to-day Brahmanical duties, but he was neglectful of his household duties. So his family members were always getting on his case, that it is okay well to worship and do your pujas and your yagyas and all these things, but what about your day-to-day affairs? You're neglecting that. So at one point he got so frustrated that he left home and he went into the hills, and then he was worshipping Lord Shiva. And every day he would increase his austerities and penances, and it would become more and more absorbed in his worship, to the point that he was so much austere in his worship of Lord Shiva that Lord Shiva appeared before him. And when he appeared before him, this Brahmana saint was so much in ecstasy to see Lord Shiva that he prostrated in front of him and started offering prayers to him. And then Lord Shiva said that, "I am so pleased with your worship. Ask for a boon. Whatever boon you want, I will grant you." And this saint, he simply prayed to Lord Shiva. He's saying, "I only want your mercy. And by your mercy, please connect me with the Supreme Lord Krishna." Now Lord Shiva was still perplexed by this boon he's asking. He's saying, why is he asking to be connected with Krishna? Because if you read in the entire history, mankind is worshipping Lord Shiva for many material boons. And he very easily grants you. You know, Prabhupada explains, one of his name is Ashutosh. Ashutosh means one who is very easily pleased. So simply by offering simple prayers and worship, he is very pleased and he will grant you a boon. And what is the boon most people ask for? Is material prosperity, material wealth, material happiness. Even to the extent, Lord Shiva is explaining, is that people even ask for his beautiful wife Bhavani, who is the most beautiful personality in this material creation. But nobody asks for Krishna. So then, of course, he's obliged. So he took him by his hand and took him to the spiritual world. And he introduced him to Krishna. And of course, Krishna was so happy to receive Lord Shiva, because Lord Shiva has a very special relationship with Krishna. And when this Brahmana saint was introduced, Krishna was very happy. But Krishna told this Brahmana saint that by the mercy of Lord Shiva, you've entered into the spiritual world, but your time is not yet ready for you to come back here. So you have to go back. But I will give you a special boon, that any time you need anything, just remember me and I will come. And I'll come to your aid and help you. But until that point, when you're ready to come back to the spiritual world, you have to go back to the material world. So he came back to the material world, completely blissed out. And he was fully absorbed in the holy name. All he did all day long was just chant. And wherever he went, he just introduced people to chanting. He just talked about Krishna's greatness, talked about Krishna's pastimes. And that is all he did. So meanwhile, his household affairs are getting a bit poverty-stricken, because he's not earning any money, and his wife is getting frustrated. He's got a young daughter who is now of marriageable age, and so many things, problems are coming along. And anytime someone approached him, they said, "Oh, don't worry, Krishna will take care of everything." Now, really speaking, in one purport of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada is writing in his purport. Prabhupada says, one who has taken complete shelter of this Krishna consciousness movement, fully surrendered to the lotus feet of Krishna, all his material needs are taken care of. Now these are some very powerful words by Prabhupada. Now if you and I, when we read that statement in the purport, we say, wow, this is great. If you take shelter of Krishna, all your material needs are taken care of. Then you sit down and analyze. Well, I have taken shelter of Krishna consciousness. I have come to Krishna consciousness. I am surrendered to the process. I am doing my sadhana bhakti. But why I am struggling. My material needs are not taken care of. Then we would say, either the statement is wrong, or there is something wrong in our execution of Krishna consciousness. Now, I would say there is something wrong in our execution of Krishna consciousness, because the statement is perfect. Krishna is ultimately the one who provides all your requirements, all your needs. He doesn't deprive you of anything. But Krishna will not fulfill your want. We have so many wants. I want this, I want that, I want. And once we get into this consciousness of I want, then very quickly it changes into I need. I want, therefore I need, and I need, therefore I want. And you get lost in the whole process. And then you try to figure out how to fulfill all your desires. But Prabhupada says that in Krishna consciousness, you have to give up your material desires and fill that with spiritual desire. I give this example that if there is a glass full of water, now water is the most important element required for sustenance. You know, if you don't drink water regularly, then what happens? You become dehydrated and so many problems come. So now you have a glass full of water, very important element. At the same time, there is nectar available. Now, in order to get that nectar, you have to sacrifice the water. If you do not empty the glass, then you cannot fill the glass with the nectar. And if you cannot fill the glass with the nectar, then you cannot consume it. So you have to sacrifice. So both are important, but nectar, if you analyze, is not just the nectarian sweet taste of the nectar, but it also has water in it. But we sometimes cannot see that. What we see is, oh, I've got a glass full of water. If I empty it, then I'll fill it with nectar, but then I lose water. So you don't want to lose. In other words, we have these desires filled in the heart. At the same time, you have desire to become Krishna conscious. We want to be freed from material suffering. And then the process is very simple. It says you give up these material desires, empty your heart of all these material desires, and fill that with spiritual desires. And what is a spiritual desire? There's only one. And that, Prabhupada explains, is that our prayer should be, Krishna, please allow me to serve you. That's all. But many times our prayers are not of asking Krishna for that boon to serve him. But we want to fulfill many other material desires. And sometimes we start to think that my material desires actually are spiritual desires. You know, especially when we come to Krishna consciousness, we begin to think that, oh, Rupa Goswami says very clearly in his teachings that use that is favorable for the execution of Krishna consciousness, and that which is unfavorable, reject it. So very intellectually, we try to fit everything that, yes, this I can use for Krishna. This I can use for Krishna. Therefore, I should not reject it. You know, and we lose the power of discrimination of what is really required in the service of Krishna, what is not required in the service of Krishna. So because of that misconception, then we think everything can be used in Krishna's service. Therefore, I want all these things. But really it is not for Krishna's service, but it is for our own sense pleasures. Another example I can give you of this way of thinking is that in the month of April, May is the mango season, and you know, especially living in this country here, mango is considered a very rare tropical fruit. So mangoes are in the market, piles and piles of boxes are there, and you go to marketplace and you say, well, I like mangoes. Therefore, I will buy mangoes to offer to Krishna, and then I will eat mangoes. So then you bring mangoes for Krishna, But actually it is not for Krishna. It is for you, but you want to give it to Krishna so that it becomes prasadam. So then you say, well, I'm eating prasadam, Prabhu. Now, on the other hand, when you bring mangoes with this consciousness to Krishna, what is Krishna going to do? Krishna is not obliged to accept it. Because Krishna says very clearly in the Bhagavad Gita that whatever you offer to me, it should be offered with love and devotion. Even a leaf, even a water, even a fruit, it doesn't matter. But if it's not offered with devotion, then it is not. He's not going to accept it. So if I bring a box of mango with the consciousness that I like mangoes, therefore I offer it to Krishna, then when I offer it to Krishna, Krishna is saying, yes, but you bought this for yourself. You didn't buy it for me. So therefore I'm not obliged to accept it. So then after offering to Krishna and putting in front of him, ringing the bell, saying mantras, and 10 minutes later, oh, wow, and then you start indulging in eating mangoes. What happens? He's just eating a mango. It is not prasadam, it's not mercy of the Lord. Because the Lord has not accepted it. Huh? We understand this concept from that another story of Ramanuja. Ramanuja was asked by his disciples the power of prasadam. And we have all heard this story, you know. And Ramanuja said, if I explain to you in words, you will not understand. Let me show you by action. So he picked up a fistful of rice from his plate. And he put it in the river, and every morsel of that rice, which was eaten by a fish, that fish was immediately liberated from the fish body, and it went into the spiritual world, in the spiritual body. So after observing that act, the disciples started asking Ramanuja that we are taking prasadam every day. How comes we are still stuck in this body? That is because you are not eating prasadam. Eating just food for satisfying your tongue and the belly. Because prasadam really is supposed to be honored and respected. Prasadam, Prabhupada explained, is non-different from Krishna. But do we see, honestly, that prasadam plate in front of you is non-different from Krishna? It is just our senses and our tongue's desire to eat palatable food. And therefore we say, yes, this is Mahaprasadam, so I will gobble it all up. And then we say, wow, I had a whole plate of Mahaprasadam. Temporarily, you will be satisfied, because the tongue is satisfied, the belly is satisfied, because this belly is full, tongue has had a palatable taste already tested by eating. But a few hours later, what happens? You forget. Now, if one comes in contact with Krishna, one can never forget Krishna. You see, the residents of Vrindavan, when Krishna left Vrindavan to go to Mathura, all the residents were stopping Krishna from going to Mathura, saying, if you leave, then you will be out of our sight. And Krishna left for his onward pastimes in Mathura. And he said, I'll be back as soon as I finish my business with Kansa. And all the residents of Vrindavan, after Krishna was out of their sight, they still did not forget him. Every moment they're thinking of Krishna. And especially when we read the pastimes, all the coward boys, all the gopis, they're all looking everywhere for Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Because once they have connected with Krishna, they cannot live without Krishna. Now, we are connected with Krishna. But we can live without Krishna. And I can confidently say that. Why? Because in our 24-hour-a-day period, how many times are we forgetful of Krishna? A lot of the times we are forgetful of Krishna. We come in the morning, we see Krishna, we take our japa mala, we chant Krishna's names. We walk around in the building, we see pictures everywhere displaying Krishna's pastimes, but we're still forgetful of Krishna. We are so absorbed in other activities but Krishna. Therefore, we cannot remember Krishna. But once one is connected with Krishna, then you will never forget Krishna. You cannot live without Krishna. But generally we find very easy to forget Krishna. That is because we haven't reached that platform of Krishna consciousness. And therefore, that statement where Prabhupada says that one who is fully surrendered to the process of Krishna consciousness, all his material needs are taken care of. Now, if you look at the situation of Prabhupada gave up everything. He gave up his home. He gave the comfort of his wages. He had nothing. He retired to Vrindavan. And he was staying in Vrindavan. Now in Vrindavan, he did not think about, let me make my material situation comfortable. Let me get a nice apartment. Let me get some finances secure so that I don't have to worry about my daily prasadam. Prabhupada was not concerned. If you read Prabhupada's pastimes, he was simply concerned with the instructions given to him by his spiritual master. And his whole meditation was, how can I fulfill these instructions of my spiritual master? And what was the instruction? If you ever get money, print books. That was his instruction. And Prabhupada was meditating. Only yesterday I was reading. In fact, in one of the chapters, Prabhupada is writing, you know, and I was reading that last night, and Prabhupada is saying that before I start this, let me offer my respectful obeisances to my guru. And then he recited that how he met his spiritual master, you know, in Radhakund, and gave him many instructions. And he said one of the most important instructions of all instructions was that if you get money, print books. So Prabhupada's meditation was there. But he did not make any other arrangements. He was simply dependent on Krishna. Because his whole consciousness was how to spread this Krishna consciousness to everyone. And of course, the secret was given to him by his spiritual master by printing books and distributing the books. And Prabhupada was fully convinced, and that's what he did. And then, when he was preparing to leave India for that mission to be fulfilled, to preach the message of Bhagavatam to the Western world, the English-speaking world, Prabhupada, what did he do? He got a trunk full of books and a small bag of his clothing. That's all he had. He did not prepare for anything. He did not think that, oh, when I'm going to some foreign country, I will need some acquaintance there. I will need some place to stay. I will have to make arrangements for my daily expenses. Prabhupada was not concerned. Because Prabhupada fully understood that he is on a mission for Krishna. And he only wants to do that is pleasing to his spiritual master and Krishna. And therefore, Krishna will take care of it. So he was fully absorbed in that. And we can see Prabhupada's pastimes unfolding. Even though Prabhupada was going through many, many difficulties, but Krishna never abandoned him. He was there every moment with him, every step. And Krishna was fulfilling all his requirements. Whatever Prabhupada required, Krishna was giving to him. And the mission of Lord Chaitanya was spread. So in similar way, here in this purport, we see all the demigods are approaching Lord Shiva for protection, to help. And of course, Lord Shiva is the greatest Vaishnava, as I mentioned earlier on, that he, out of his compassion, will come and save all the living entities from the greatest danger. But he is not thinking, if I drink this poison, what will happen? Why should I drink this poison and kill myself to save you? He did not think of that. He just drank it without second consideration. Because of course, Lord Shiva also, is not, as I said, is not an ordinary personality, but he had the power to absorb the poison and not be affected by it. Now, great personalities, they have these tremendous powers. invested in them, as Prabhupada says, Shaktya Vishavatar, it is the empowerment of the Lord. And therefore you have same qualities as the Lord. And your body then is not of material elements, it is transcendental. In this relation, I can give you another example of Lord Buddha. Lord Buddha had a daily practice that he would go to 3 places every day for begging alms. Whatever he got in those 3 places, that was it for the day. He would not consider the 4th place, because the other 3 places did not give anything. So that was his daily practice. So he would go with his disciples and beg alms. The first place, whatever they got, they would take. Second place, whatever they get. Third place, and if they did not get anything, they would just go back. So one time when Lord Buddha was going with his disciples, the first place they went, they said, we have no alms to give today. So he said, okay, no problem. He went on to the next place. Second place, also no alms. So he said, okay, fine. Third place was a liquor shop. Now, Lord Buddha is not planning that I will go to this grocery store, and this grocery store, therefore I will get grocery. Whatever comes on the way, first, you just approach. So he approached, and it was a liquor shop. So he just pull out his kamandal and says, Bhikshan Dehin, give some alms. And the guy said, hey, this is a liquor shop, what can I do? He says, whatever it is, if you want, you give, if you don't want, it's okay. So the guy said, okay, out of culture, he said, there's no harm in giving to a saintly person whatever I have. So he filled his pot with liquor. And Lord Buddha said, thank you, and walked off. So the disciples are thinking, wow! The Lord and Master has done it, so we can do it. So he filled up. They all filled up their little pots with liquor and then went and started drinking. And they all became intoxicated and they were lying all over the place, completely spaced out and legless. And Lord Buddha, he consumed his and went back to the ashram, and he waited for all his disciples to come. They didn't turn up. And then next morning they all sort of wandered in, half dazed, and drunk and completely senseless. So what happened? So, we took the liquor and we were out. So Lord Buddha was saying, this is not a very good thing. So Lord Buddha, next day, purposely decided to teach the disciples a lesson. So he went to the first place. Obviously he was not going to get anything, because he had pre-planned this time. Second place, same thing, nothing was given. Third place was a place where the shop, they were making molten lead. So the guy was, there with his furnace and he's melting lead. And he's saying, Bhikshan Dehin, is it? If you want, you can give, otherwise it's okay. So the guy said, yes, it is my duty to give. So he filled his pot with molten lead. And Lord Buddha, he drank it. And he said, disciples? And the disciples, molten lead. As soon as you pour in your mouth, what's going to happen? He's going to burn you and he will kill you. Say, no, this is not, you don't want to do this. So they said, no. So of course, later on then Lord Buddha said, don't do what I do, but do what I tell you. Because Lord Buddha is not an ordinary personality. So even if he drank all the liquor, it won't affect him. Sometimes we hear, for example, the story of Mirabai. When she was given poison to kill her, she took it in the spirit that this is the grace of the Lord. So she prayed to Krishna and said, dear Lord, if this is what you want, so be it. And by the grace of the Lord, she drank. And what happened? That poison turned into nectar by the mercy of the Lord. The Lord can do anything for his devotee. So when Mirabai drank, it wasn't the poison she was drinking. He was drinking nectar. Why? Because she took it in the spirit that whatever the Lord wants, that's fine. She was fully surrendered. And the Lord, of course, is not going to make his devotees suffer. So the Lord transferred. So same with Lord Buddha. When he was drinking the liquor, it was turned into nectar. But the other guys, his disciples, they were not pure enough. in their heart was surrendered enough. So they were trying to imitate. So this is what happened. And then they became, you know, acknowledged by this particular incident that don't try to imitate, but just try to follow instructions, thereby come pure. So this is very important that we do not try to imitate the spiritual master. And there's another incident I can tell you within which happened within our own society. Is that one time Prabhupada in America, in New York, was feeling little discomfort in his stomach. There was some gas problem. So Prabhupada asked that, can you get me some soda water? Now in India, it is very, you know, of course nowadays it's not so prominent because all these Western products have come into market, but there used to be a bottle with carbonated water, you know, which is called soda water. And if you drink that, immediately the gas in the stomach will go and it will burp it out. So all the stomach will be freed from the gaseous pressure. So it will relieve you from that discomfort. So Prabhupada was asking from his disciples that, can you find some soda water? And they said, well, Prabhupada, you know, there's no soda water here. So Prabhupada said, then is there anything which has got carbonated water? They said, there is this 7-Up. So the Prabhupada said, what is this 7-Up? So they explained, it's like a, you know, lemon drink, lemonade. So Prabhupada said, lemon is okay. So they brought 7-Up for Prabhupada. And Prabhupada drank a 7-Up. And he felt some relief from his discomfort. So Prabhupada said, that's very nice. And before you know it, it spread like wildfire. 7-Up is bona fide. The spiritual master has drunk 7-Up. So let us all drink 7-Up. And it became a regular thing, 7-Up. Prasadam? Yes, 7-Up. Prasadam? Yes, 7-Up. And he started serving 7-Ups everywhere. And it's become a tradition now, the 7-Ups everywhere. You know, you go to someone's home, there's a, you know, satsang program. After satsang program is finished, you know, sitting down for prasadam, and the host says, 7-Up, 7-Up? And he says, yes, 7-Up. Why? Prabhupada drank it. But why did Prabhupada drink it? He had some discomfort. But Prabhupada was not saying, well, you know, it's a hot day, I'm, wow, you know, relieve myself, 7-Up. Enjoy. No, Prabhupada did not drink it for sense gratification. But we have taken it. So in other words, you know, we have to be very careful that we don't try to just, you know, misunderstand what the spiritual master has taught us, or the great Vaishnavas, great teachers who are teaching us. But we follow in their instructions to become perfect so that we can make our spiritual life a success. But by drinking 7-Up, definitely we are not going to become spiritually Krishna conscious. Because Prabhupada drank it for a purpose. He did not drink it for just for the sake of having a fizzy drink. So, you know, I still feel very strongly that it is a wrong thing to do, and still devotees who can understand this will try to refrain themselves from indulging in 7-Ups and many other ups, you know, if they want to really make advancement in Krishna consciousness. Because Krishna consciousness is a very serious process where we want to be freed from all these attachments, all these desires, and feel our heart. Just like in the morning after Guru Puja, we recite English translation. We say, we are desirous to have our hearts filled with transcendental knowledge. Now, how you can fill your heart with transcendental knowledge is simply by emptying all that nonsense is in there and then filling it with transcendental knowledge. You know, if you have so much other, you know, valueless knowledge in there, then the transcendental knowledge will not go in there. You have to empty it. And only then we can actually experience the benefit and the realization of transcendental knowledge. Otherwise, transcendental knowledge is just like just hearing, but not absorbing. Only this morning, while kirtan was going on, I was thinking, and this realization came to me, saying, we hear so many sounds, but how many of those sounds do we really are absorbed in? Kirtan is going on, we're chanting in the kirtan.
But how much of that kirtan is actually being absorbed into the heart? A small portion of it, because mostly it's the superficial hearing. And why I say this is because I have a personal experience that something which gratifies your senses, you'll hear and absorb that, and it'll go penetrate to the deep core of your heart, and it'll remain there, because that is what is gratifying you. Now, I'll share this one realization of mine. You know, when I was in the 70s, you know, we were into this, you know, like every decade, there different music is going on. So we had the 70s music, you know. So the 70s music was there. We are young teenagers, fully absorbed into the, you know, the music scene at the time. And most of us, you know, had some favorite songs and favorite groups. So we would hear the song and the lyrics. And the lyrics are so deep-rooted in the core of the heart that even if the music is not there, you can still recite the lyrics, you know. So, as this one song I used to sing, you know, to myself, not to public, because I'm not a very good voice. But anyway, after joining Krishna consciousness, everything is Maya, Prabhu. Okay, we forget everything. We give up everything. So there is no hearing of radios. Of course, in those days, we didn't have MP3 players or Walkmans, any of these. It was just a little transistor radio, you know. And even those were big ones, you know. So, given up everything. Now, almost 30 years down the road, I've not heard that song. One day, I'm driving my car, stuck in the, you know, at a traffic light, and the car next door to me is blaring the 70s music, and I'm going, wow! I started singing the lyrics. And for 30 years, I have not heard the song. For 30 years, it's been absent from my mind, my thought, my you know, I've never even remembered the damn thing. But all of a sudden, the music is playing in the next door car, and I'm starting singing the lyrics. And I said, wait a minute, what the hell is this? Why am I singing these, you know, crazy lyrics? But it is still deep rooted in the core of my heart. Then I was thinking, well, this Maya is so strong that this song used to gratify my senses, and therefore it is so deep rooted in my heart. But I have been reading Bhagavad Gita ever since I joined the movement. Regularly. I have forgotten now the count how many times I've read the whole Bhagavad Gita. And sometimes I've read the same verse more than 100 times. But it's not in the core of the heart. Because I can't get the word straight off, roll it off my tongue. Why? Because that verse is not gratifying my senses. I say, yes, I'm reading Bhagavad Gita, Prabhu. I read every day. It's no problem. But it's not going inside. The transcendental knowledge is not going in. And therefore, I cannot remember it. And I think this would be of most of us, because that which is gratifying us, we want to develop that hearing and keep it in. And that which is not gratifying us, it is just going through the motion of hearing, but it doesn't go deep round, and therefore we cannot recall it. And therefore all these wonderful instructions of the scriptures are there to purify us, free us from this material bondage. But what happens is that we take it superficially. And therefore, you know, after so many years of even practicing Krishna consciousness, we are still suffering. We are not free from suffering. But if one who is completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness, he will be free from all suffering. And this we know, you know, if you want a practical example, you can see Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada, in his last pastimes, while he's winding up his presence in this material world, he's lying on the bed there in Vrindavan, in his room. And anyone who would see Prabhupada in that condition would know that there is a lot of discomfort and pain. Because if you have gone, some of your friends, you see them in the hospital who are suffering from some acute disease and they're going through tremendous pain, what happens? The doctors will administer morphine to kill the pain so that it's bearable for that person. Now here, Prabhupada is not taking any of this stuff, but very peacefully lying there. And he would request his disciples to softly chant Hare Krishna. Other times, he would ask for the dictaphone, and he would ask someone to recite the Sanskrit verse, and the Prabhupada would translate it. Now, this is someone who is not concerned with material bodily pains and aches. He's transcended. Why? Because although he's in the material world, his body is not of material nature anymore. He's transcendental, he's spiritual. He's gone beyond. So he doesn't feel that. And we can see that we can also come to that platform. Prabhupada said that I'm teaching you by my personal example how to become a perfect devotee of Krishna. He's teaching us every moment, every action Prabhupada does is a lesson for us to learn how to become a perfect devotee in Krishna consciousness. So this is what we have to observe in our day-to-day practice of Krishna consciousness. And when we come to that level, then you will see what Prabhupada's statement says, that one who is fully fixed in absorbing Krishna consciousness, all his requirements are taken care of by the Supreme Lord. And we have no anxiety. We are fully absorbed in the practice of Krishna consciousness. So we have run out of time. Thank you very much. So I'll stop here. Hare Krishna.